Welcome to the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast, the hottest wrestling show in the universe. we have a big episode for everybody, another pay-per-view retrospective. Today we'll be talking about Armageddon 2000. Before we get all into all that, I'm one of your hosts, Daniel Hummer. I'm here with my awesome co-host, good friend Eric.
What's up?
Clint is here.
Hey.
How you doing? And, yeah, we got a great show. I can't wait to get into
Wait a minute.
Oh, yeah, Doug's here, too.
God.
He doesn't count.
Interesting. I just complimented how nice your ass looked.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. We got a hell of a card to examine and talk about here. We got it's obviously headlined by the six-man Hell in a Cell match. Kurt Angle, Austin Rock, Triple H, Keish, and Undertaker. So it's going to be a fun time. I can't wait to talk about it. Before we do all that, let's go to Doug with the plugs.
All right, make sure you listen to Boxman and Smart, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, every Wednesday night, mixler.com/DirtSheetDudes. They can be found on all major podcast platforms around 10:15, 10:20 Eastern Time. Then catch them on Saturdays for the Hollywood Hangout, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturday night. Mixler.com/Hollywood Hangout. They can be found on all major podcast platforms. When Eric doesn't have to work on Thursdays, he usually joins him for the Wednesday show.
Yep. I wasn't on this week.
All right, so don't listen to this week's episode since Eric wasn't on it.
Wow. The disrespect. You know, the disrespect.
They can handle it. Mainly because Boxman will just give it right back. Smart's usually drunk half the time, so he won't remember half the shit I say.
I should be ashamed of yourselves.
We should be ashamed. I am ashamed of myself, and I'm damn proud of it. Listen to us at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time every not every Friday night, as I'm getting ready to explain, but Friday nights for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. However, the next 2 weeks we will not be on air because there happen to be holidays coming up.
So this is the last
couple
of
the year. Nights. Will you shut up and let me finish?
Yes.
Couple nice holidays coming up called Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. So we will not be on the air the 24th or the 31st. However, we will be back on January the 7th. And the show we are coming back with is New Year's Revolution 2007.
Holy shit.
Wow.
So we'll be talking about that show. I got some other stuff planned for the month. It's going to be mainly Royal Rumble focused, but I'll get into that at a different time. But blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted. Listen to us tomorrow, listen to Daniel and I tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time for Unscripted Unlimited, as tomorrow night we will be talking 2.5 Men.
Yes.
And then listen to Daniel and Mindy Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time for the Scaredy Cats. And they will update everybody as to what they're doing. You can also find the Scaredy Cats on the YouTube, I think, right?
Yeah, we're on YouTube. We're doing the movie Pulse this week.
Pulse. Okay. And... then make sure you listen to Clinton and Eric this upcoming week for the NFL Hard Hits show. Any idea when you guys will be doing that this week? I know the game's getting postponed, kind of may have screwed that up for you.
Yeah, because to tell you the truth, with the game being postponed on my schedule, I'm not sure if I want to be able to do one this week.
Well, I mean, technically, if you need somebody to fill in, I'll be home because I don't have to work Friday morning because it's Christmas Eve, or I don't have to work on Friday because it's Christmas Eve. So, Eric, if you want, and I'm getting home early on Thursday because of our Christmas party. So, if you need somebody to fill in, if you want to do the show on Thursday, I'll do it.
Okay, I'll get back to you on that. Because I have to work Friday, so.
We'll see.
But I'm off Thursday.
We'll see if you make the cut.
I was just going to say, I mean, I can't be any worse than the third guy they had a few weeks ago.
Oh, come on. He's a fool.
All right, that's pretty much it.
All right, boys. Armageddon 2000. Isn't he coming back? Armageddon 2000. We got a big one here. Tell us a little bit about the 2000 time period, Clint, and how special it was. This is one of my favorite times. I know you're an Attitude Era fan. What was so good about the year 2000?
So what made it good year is because a lot of young stars was just dumping ship. You had Chris Jericho making his awesome, not too long ago, his awesome debut against that promo against With The Rock coming from WCW. Also, you had young talent. Triple H was just being in the form, was bringing up as a main threat. You had The Rock. You had Austin. You had Austin, Rikishi, and Mick Carter going into our main event this year. Undertaker coming back from injury, coming back from not only the Dead Man, but a whole new persona as the American. Kane was getting going into a single run as well. Kurt Angle, everybody's favorite underdog. I think this had to be like if you wanted to be a heel at any time. I really hated Kurt Angle around this time. I love him now, but at that time I hated Kurt Angle with a passion. And he played that. He played that villain. It's like I'm not sure they wanted to build him up as a fan favorite, but to him being all cocky and yes, I'm American. I'm a wrestler, a real wrestler in the wrestling business, and I can beat this. There's matches with Chris Jericho, with Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero. I mean, it was great. That's when wrestling, I think, was at its finest. It was great storytelling along with great athletes doing everything at once.
Absolutely. And here we're in Birmingham, Alabama, at the Birmingham Jefferson Civic Center. The gate is about 14,920 people. We have a buy rate of 465,000. Business is still hot, Doug. Let's get into it.
Okay.
First match on the card, we have a match on Heat with Scotty Too Hotty against D'Lo Brown. I didn't watch it, not much to say there. But we start off with the Radicals. Dean Malenko, Eddie, and Perry against Team Extreme, Jeff, Matt, and Lita. Talk about the little bit of the story behind this and how creepy it was that Dean Malenko was married and going after Lita, Doug.
Okay, so I think it started, like, actually just that week. On Raw. Because I think what happened was Dean was flirting with Lita and she was just kind of rolling her eyes. And then Benoit opened up the door because Lita was standing behind the door. So Benoit opened it up and knocked her out. Malenko looked at him and Benoit said, "Dean, who cares? It's just some stupid broad," and walked away. And then, the Hardys came to her rescue, and then they ended up getting beat up. Then Lita and Malenko had a quote unquote date.
Yeah,
I think on SmackDown, and the Hardy Boys. It's kind of if you go back to
Rick and Baby Doll.
Is that no, Rick and Precious.
Precious.
Jimmy Garvin's wife. Yeah. Rick Flair won the right to take Jimmy Garvin's wife Precious out on a date. They were going to meet in a hotel. She comes to the door, or what we think comes to the door, and it actually just turns out to be Ronnie Garvin in drag.
Yeah.
Which he has done on more than one occasion. And, you know, knocks out Flair. JJ gets thrown in a pool. So it almost kind of had those vibes.
Yeah.
So for anybody that, you know, was, you know, watched wrestling around that time, this was 87. This is basically the same thing. Matt and Jeff basically interfered and, you know, beat the hell out of Dean in a hotel room wearing a bathrobe, you know, black socks. I mean, because, you know, every hotel room beatdown has to have a guy in a bathrobe and black socks.
Yeah.
And then that's basically how it got set up. And yet, you know, Malenko, because Malenko was married.
Yeah.
But Malenko had always said, he's like, my wife is married. I'm not. Like, that's how it was. And it's funny how, like, this all started because, you know, Benoit was the one, even though Benoit was involved in the Intercontinental title feud, Benoit was the one that hit Lita with the door.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, you know, Benoit, we all know, is a gentleman. But he would never do anything to hurt a woman.
I understood. All right, keep going.
So this feud, and it turned out to be kind of an entertaining feud because everybody involved, including Lita, could work.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, it was kind of creepy just because, you know, Malenko just, you know, obviously he's married.
Yeah, there was a couple things. I did like the segment, though, when they went out to date. One of the things I liked about it was when they were at dinner and Lita was like, she was like, I'm going to take you home and I'm going to do all this stuff to you. And she's like, I just want to get home with you. And then he very quickly, Malenko's like, check. And I just found that. Yeah. Like she's like, we got to go home.
Yeah,
like, Jack, come on, get me the fuck out of here. So I was dying at that. Even though he was supposed to be a scumbag, I felt for the guy. But yeah, get the check, you know. Go take care of your business. And when they did the reveal, when they turned the lights on and Matt's sitting there, and he's like, champagne, Dean? And then he hit him over the head with it. Like, I know it was kind of corny, but I just thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean.
It was.
Because, like, all those, you know, kind of like hotel room scenes. I mean, and they tried to recreate.
Yeah, I know. Nothing's original in wrestling. And yeah. There certainly was. And obviously, I think the Precious Ric Flair thing is the best example of that. Because that's just an all-time one of the greatest segments ever.
Yeah, but this was funny.
But this was funny, and this was a good play on that. And you can do a couple things a couple different times. Who cares? It's been fucking 10 years.
Yeah, because if you do it, like, every, like, year, then it gets tiresome. But, like, if you do it, like, another example is when, you know, Ric Flair, you know, the couple of times he got beat up and basically got his clothes torn off. All right, they did it with him and Steamboat in 1979, and they did it again with him and Steamboat in 1989.
What do you think WWE ever went back to Alabama for a pay-per-view?
Probably because they felt like it was Alabama really wasn't a hotbed.
Yeah.
I mean, well, let me clarify.
Okay.
Alabama at one time was a huge wrestling territory, or not a huge wrestling territory, but a very successful wrestling territory. Continental, which was owned by the Fullers. Yeah. Okay. And that actually, Shawn Michaels wrestled in the Continental Territory in Alabama.
In Berman?
Yeah. And so, like, it was, you know, a huge territory town, but as far as them never going back, it was more than likely just because they felt that it was, you know, it wasn't their kind of town. It wasn't a Birmingham wasn't a big name town for like a pay-per-view. Birmingham would be a place that like WCW would hold a pay-per-view. Or even today, like maybe AEW.
Yeah.
Okay. Like big name, big WWE towns to hold pay-per-views would be Philly, New York City, Brooklyn, Chicago. I would probably say Minneapolis, Vegas, Toronto, Boston, LA. You'd probably throw a few more in there. Like maybe Brooklyn. Like San Francisco or Pittsburgh, I think, is another one because that's a big town. Cleveland. But, like, those are, like, the main, like, towns that WWE always has to make sure. Even Buffalo every once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, they throw Buffalo a bone. More than what the NFL has lately. But
they've been boning us.
Yeah. And even also towns like you could say the Florida, like Miami. That's another one, right? But it's more the big name towns, especially towns where, like, there is a football team. Because in Alabama, you know what the funnest thing you can do in Birmingham, Alabama is?
Your cousin.
That was not what I was going to say, but, I mean, pretty much.
I feel like that was a good one.
I enjoyed it.
Thanks, but, Eric.
I mean, I was going to say drive to Atlanta.
What'd you think of this match, Eric?
I thought it was a solid opener. I enjoyed it. I mean, it was fun to see Lita at the end and her and Dean. Basically, it was those two the main story, so it was fun to see those two in the ring.
What were your thoughts on this?
I enjoyed the match.
I thought it was an okay match. I mean, I wasn't a big fan of the whole intergender. I figured if you're going to have a six-man tag, elimination-style type of match, and only have one woman in there, especially at the time when the women wasn't being pushed as wrestlers, I think made it kind of awkward to watch. I'm speaking like if you were like a first-time viewer and not knowing especially how they wasn't really pushing the women or athletes in a six-man tag. I think Lita held her own. And I think she had to held her own. She proved that she could actually wrestle or some of the women in WWE can wrestle that night too. Not just her.
Exactly.
Yeah, she's wrestling men, so it's a big deal. All right, Doug, how many stars would you give this out of 10?
I'd probably give it a 5.
Eric?
I gave it a 6.
I want to give it a 5.
All right. I think I'll go a 5, too. I thought it was pretty mediocre. It was good action. I like all six people. And I think for 8 minutes, it was what it was, and it was good. But, I mean, there's way better matches from all of these people that you can watch instead. But it was a decent opener.
Oh, yeah.
Now we got William Regal and Hardcore Holly for the European Championship. There isn't really too much to go on here, but what do you got, Doug?
So it kind of started at Survivor Series. Hardcore Holly had returned like the week prior to Survivor Series, and this was kind of like an unadvertised bonus match.
Yeah.
Because Hardcore Holly interrupted Regal during heat, so the match had been made. Holly got disqualified at Survivor Series, and then at the Insurrection pay-per-view, which was 8 days prior to Armageddon, Regal lost the European title to Crash Holly, but he won it back on Monday's Raw. And he was also, he beat up Crash after he won the belt back, and Hardcore, being Crash's cousin, came out and said, quit fucking with my cousin. And, you know, this match had been made. And, you know, obviously, like, at the end, you know, Raven came out and cost Hardcore the match.
Which didn't make any sense.
Well, it did if you watch, like, weeks after. Like, because Raven was trying to prove how hardcore he was.
Yeah.
All right?
Ah.
And you do that by beating up Hardcore Holly.
Makes sense.
Because then Raven would go on. He would smash Al Snow's head with a cinder block. He would win the hardcore title. He would have his female companion, you know, Ugly Tori, you know, help him. But, you know, you didn't know it was her until an episode of Heat, which isn't even available on the network yet. You know, she finally got unmasked. You know, once they unmasked her, I actually begged for them to put the mask back on her. So the whole thing, there really wasn't much to the match, but, yeah.
Yeah. Eric, what's your opinion?
I thought it was an okay match. Don't forget that spot, Hardcore Holly was from Bama too, so it was his hometown, but, there's a little note there. I thought it was an okay match. It was. He wasn't gonna win the match, but it was just a showcase to showcase both guys, I guess.
What'd you think, Quinn?
Well, all right. I mean, I wasn't a big fan of the match, to tell you the truth. So it is what it is.
Damn. All right. What would you rate it?
For me, I'll rate it a 4.
I give it a 4 myself.
Eric?
I'll give it a 5.
You're going to be different.
Why not?
I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to give it a 4, too. I think it was just below average. I like both guys, but they didn't give them much time to do anything. Now let's go to the man with the big penis, Val Venus.
Well, by around this time, he was neutered.
Oh. Well, the man without a penis, Val Venus. He goes against another woman without a penis, China. And
he had something in his corner that should have been neutered, ivory.
What do you think?
Before
we go to jail, what do you think?
I thought Right to Censor was a shitty-ass fucking gimmick. But they knew how to get heat. As far as the match goes, like, yeah, there was heat. There was heat to the match because, you know, the Right to Censor, they wanted to censor China. And because of the, you know, the Playboy thing and all that. But it was okay. It wasn't really anything special. And Ivory is just butt-ass ugly. Okay. Now, I have some disagreements with you here. Right to Censor wasn't a shitty gimmick. I thought it was one of the hottest things in the company. And here's why.
Are you serious?
Here is why. Just, can I explain it first?
Get on an answer, Clement.
I'm prepared for it. I understand. But everyone in this room, everyone on this phone call, we all hate the Right to Censor, right?
Yeah.
Every time they're on our screens, we fucking say, someone needs to kick these guys' ass. They're doing their job. They were the perfect heels because Attitude Era was all about do whatever the hell you want, not censorship. You know, that's why we hate the PG era and everything, because we hate censorship. That's why they were so perfect, because they're going out here and they're saying, no, we can't have a porn star. We can't have a pimp. We can't have all these things. We have to, you know, live life by the book, and people don't like to do that. So, like, I thought Stevie Richards could have done a program with Steve Austin. Honestly. Because he was the head of the Right to Censor. Okay, maybe I'm a dick, but Austin was he was the rebellious, go against the grain. That's why he worked so well with Vince. He was rebellious. He was go against the grain. If you put rules in front of him, he'll say, that's fine, flip you off and light the paper on fire. He doesn't go by the rules. I think he would have been Stevie Richards would have been a good foil for him for a 5-minute match, get a stunner real quick, and go home. I like the gimmick because I thought they were perfect heels for the time period. Because you're thinking about the time period. Everyone wants to see boobs around this time. The girls there, they're not legitimate athletes. No offense, I love all the women. But they weren't legitimate athletes, really, besides the few. They were pieces of, you know, come on.
They were liking. Okay, you know, I will agree with you on that sort of thing. I will agree with you on that.
I just think you work. That's my
Dan,
only
you
point.
Made some great points.
Thank you. That's my only point, is I think it worked because no one wants to see – no one wants censorship, so that's why they make perfect heels.
Here's
I think they went over too much, though. I would say they went over too
much. Well, yeah, because Steven Richards should have gotten his ass kicked every time out there. But, like, if you notice, and we'll talk about this later on with the four-way match for the tag titles – he got the last shot in on the Road Dog, and he got the last shot in on Devon. Nobody did anything to him.
Yeah.
It's like that little faggot MJF. Yeah, sorry, I apologize.
It's okay.
It's like that little bastard MJF. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. He, you know, every time on TV, he has not had his comeuppance yet. Because every time somebody goes out to attack him, he runs like a little bitch, and he'll get the cheap shot in. It's like if you want to see him get his comeuppance, you might have to risk going to jail to do it.
Yeah, or buy the pay-per-view. That's why it works.
Well, buy the pay-per-view, he didn't get his comeuppance at the last pay-per-view.
Not at the last one, but who was he fighting?
Darby.
But he has had his comeuppance at some pay-per-views. He had the comeuppance against Moxley.
Yeah. Moxley and Jericho, I think those are the only two he actually put over.
And that's also a star. That's comparing apples to oranges, because they very clearly want him to be the heel face of the company moving forward. That's different. Steven Richards was always going to be a mid-card at best.
Right. But so why can't he get his ass kicked every time?
I agree. I do think in classic pro wrestling, you know, mindsets, it's good to have him wait for it. But, like, when did he really get his – he got his ass kicked by China a couple times, but
– China, every time Billy Gunn got his hands on him, Billy Gunn beat the shit out of him.
Yeah. But you make the audience wait, and you get a big pop out of it.
Yeah, I mean, he's just got that –
again, like the MJF comparison, well, Steven Richards has that face you just want. It has a very punchable face. Yeah. MJF, I think, has a stabbable face.
Yes. And I understood what you said about Ivory. I don't go on looks when I talk about wrestling. It's hard in this period because, like I said, that's really all we were given. But Ivory was the one of the group that could really work. And she was Steven Richards was supposed to be the leader of that faction. And who, if when you think of Right to Censor and you think of the leader, most of us are thinking of Ivory.
Right. And when I said what I said about Ivory, first of all, what I said to her, what I said about her, about how she should be neutered, well, in her case, spayed, because she's a female. Technical jargon, yes. That is not as bad as what Jerry Lawler was saying about her on the pay-per-view.
That's true.
Okay?
No, I understand.
So I was nicer to her.
But it's a different time. Theory. You put old Jerry Lawler commentary on today, he's getting canceled in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Ivory, it could work, though. And yeah. Ivory probably was the best promo because she was so – you just hated her. Everything about her.
It was nails on a chalkboard almost.
Yes.
But, again, though, I think that's what you need to get heel heat. Like, you need to have that annoying voice.
And Chyna and Ivory was a pretty good feud for the time. For females, when they didn't really have much of a division, that was a pretty solid feud that you could get into. Be like, okay, Chyna got hurt here, and there was a timeline, and it's not a bad feud.
Yeah, but
I think it set the tone for the feud for the women's division.
Right, but Chyna liked wrestling the men more.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's just like, but again, because Chyna was, Chyna was a bodybuilder, so she could kind of lift the guys up.
Yeah.
But it also just doesn't work because, like, a man against a woman is still a mismatch. Okay.
And a crime. It is a crime.
Okay, so like the intergender matches, that's why you don't see a lot of them today. But then when like Impact started bringing them back,
well, yeah, it's just not realistic. It's not like, and wrestling's not realistic. So like it worked back then, but it didn't. Like it would never work now. Like Nia's done a couple bumps with the dudes and stuff. And she's not even in the company anymore, but you're not really going to see females and males wrestling each other. You could because it's all choreographed, but it just doesn't make much sense.
Not anymore.
How many stars are we giving this? This wasn't my favorite match on the card. It had a fucky finish. I go 3.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on 3.
I'll give it 2.
Okay. All right, boys, now we have the Fatal 4-Way Tag Team Match after we have Chris Jericho and Kane. So make sure to stay tuned for that. But first we have Chris Jericho versus Kane, a heated storyline, heated aggression that all started with a cup of coffee.
Yeah. By the way, this is a last man standing match.
Yes.
This was actually one of my favorite feuds in the time period. Yeah, because I liked Kane, but also I was a huge fan of Jericho at the time.
Well, was Kane heel? He seemed heel.
Yeah. Kane, all right, so you know how we make fun of how many babyface and heel turns a Big Show had?
Kane had a lot, too.
Okay, so Kane... So let's say between end of 98 to here in 2000, right?
Yeah.
So he was a heel for, you know, when he first came in, he was a heel. And then he spent probably about a month and a half as a babyface from end of October 98 through December of 98, right?
Doing what?
Feuding with The Undertaker.
Okay.
Okay. Helping Austin feud with The Undertaker.
Okay.
Then he joined the corporation, so he turned back heel.
Right.
All right. Then they teased him going babyface in January of 99. However, didn't happen.
Okay.
But he finally went full-fledged babyface April of 99. July of 99, they teased him going back heel. Didn't happen. He stayed babyface until as long as babyface run for him at that point was April of 99, or, well, April, you know, July of 99, let's just say, because that's when he fully went babyface or whatever, through August of 2000 when he turned on The Undertaker. Okay? So already that's about two or three turns. He had been in the company for 3 years. Well, as the Kane character.
Yeah.
So, yes, he was heel here, but he would turn babyface, you know, just like a month or so later. And he would turn babyface, you know, after that performance at the 2001 Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
Because everybody wanted to cheer for him after.
Yeah, and everyone wanted to see him and Taker together, too.
Yeah. So, but this feud was kind of, I mean, yeah, it all kind of started over a cup of coffee, but then when you have Kane say how much he wanted to mangle Jericho's face.
Well, yeah, and that's the setup was a little weird, but the storyline makes sense because this is back when Jericho didn't look like you, and Jericho, or at least his body didn't, and Jericho was a young, handsome man, and he was like a rock star. He looked like a rock star. I mean, he is a rock star. And he's, you know, he gets chicks, and he's this handsome young kid. And then you got Kane, this big, ugly monster. He's a little jealous. He hates him. It's envious. Like, it's a good story.
Yeah.
Because he hates that, like, there was a lot more than just a cup of coffee if you really look into it.
Yeah.
And it had a lot to do with that. And he hated that, you know, Jericho was the personality and the attention and his face, and people thought he was attractive, and Kane was not that. So it was just a very different, cool feud. I like Jericho going over because Kane went over the next month, right, or the month before.
Kane went over at Survivor Series month before and actually at the Rebellion pay-per-view. Because they had a match there, too.
Okay. So it was cool Jericho went over. I enjoyed the match. I thought it was good. What did you think, Linus?
I enjoyed the match for what it was. I think it was a way to show Jericho's, like, skillfulness. Here's what I think you realize. Jericho's just coming from WCW. And watching Jericho in WCW and comparing him with what he did in WWE is two completely different things. Like, you see that he's able to move things. He's not just working with cruiserweights, guys his size. He's working with a bigger guy, like twice his size, and putting on one hell of a match. Stuff that he could have done, he wanted to do in WCW, they didn't allow him to do. And that's one thing I think why it was part of the downfall of why everybody was so interested in coming to the AAF, because you were able to get these matchups, dream matches that they wasn't allowing them back on the other side because of competition.
That's very true. What do you think, Eric?
I enjoyed the match. I mean, I'm a fan of Last Man Standing matches, and I enjoyed the ending where he pushed the crates on him and then saw the hand come up and he kicked it. So I enjoyed it. Probably one of my favorites on the card.
Rate
it. I'll give it a 7.
Doug?
I'll give it an 8.
I'll give it an 8, too. What do you think, Quintus? What's your rating?
I want to give it an 8, too.
All right. Excellent match. Now let's move on to that tag belt I was talking about. Tag bout I was talking about for the tag team championships. We got the infamous duo of Kate Quick and Road Dogg, better known as R-Truth now. We have Right to Censor, which is B-Squared, Bo Buchanan, and the Good Father. And we have the Dudley Boys, Bubba Ray and Devon, and they all take a job to Edge and Christian. What did you think of this one, Doug?
It was an okay match. I mean, It was kind of weird seeing Kay Quick and Road Dogg challenge for the tag belt. I mean, it was a decent four-way match. I mean, Steven Richards, I think, should have been dropped on his head, but didn't happen. But, like, Edge and Christian, you know, got another run with the tag titles, you know. Whoop-de-doo.
It was okay.
Clintus?
I agree with that. It was not that good of a match in my eyes. I think that's probably one of the matches I did not enjoy watching whatsoever.
Damn. Eric?
I actually fell asleep the first time, but I had to rewatch it, so I have to agree with the boys and say it wasn't my cup of tea.
All right, they agree with me. I think we should just end the show now, like, I mean, forever.
Yeah, it wasn't my favorite match. I didn't really get into it. The Dudley Boys and Edge and Christian have done way better, and the other two teams didn't really need to be there. So I give it a 4-star.
Yeah, exactly.
Holy crap. I mean, I'm giving it a 4 myself.
We agree with you.
I'm giving it a 2.
I'll give it a 1.
Oh, shit. I'm going to go back and give it a 0. Just so we can stand.
Well, no, you and I both gave it a 4, right?
Okay, I'm going 3 then.
Okay.
Next up, we actually have a pretty good match with Chris Benoit and Billy Gunn. These are two guys on paper that can go. Not a whole lot of heat in it, but it's for the Intercontinental Championship. The Billy Gunn was doing the one deal, and he was getting over. But Billy Gunn never really got there. But Chris Benoit was a good match. I'm going to start with you, Clintus. What was your thoughts?
I thought it was good. I think this is one of the matches I probably, like, skipped through because I was really tired. I really wanted to watch, like, the Hell in a Cell. But I didn't really pay too much attention to it, as much as I should have. But, like, the highlights I did watch, yeah, I enjoyed it, so that's all I want to say.
Eric?
I enjoyed it. It was an okay match. I wish it would have gone longer. What was the backstory with this, Doug? How did this match come to be?
All right, so Billy Gunn won the Intercontinental title on Thanksgiving from Eddie Guerrero. They had the rematch
okay.
The following week on Raw. After the match, Benoit put Billy Gunn in the Crippler Crossface. And that's basically how the match had come about, is that, like, Benoit wanted to get the Intercontinental title back.
Okay.
So,
did they continue the feud?
Huh?
Did they continue the feud, or was this a one-off?
They had the rematch the next night on Raw, but Eddie Guerrero interfered, so. So after that, it was pretty much done, because Billy went right into the feud with Right to Censor.
Okay. Thank you, Doug.
No problem. For this match for me, and I was a fan of both guys, you know, work, obviously. But Billy, I just felt like because Billy was having a hard time with his knee, there were too many botches, I think.
Yeah, he botched it a couple times. But I did like the match, and Benoit's a heavy hitter. He's always fun to watch.
Yeah.
Technically, so I give this a 6.
I mean, I would give it a 6. I would give it a 6 myself.
Eric?
I'll give it a 5.
Okay.
All right, let's move on to the women match. We have a three-way between Molly Holly, Trish Stratus, and Ivory. Trish Stratus looked very bodacious tonight. She wasn't quite this Trish Stratus that we know yet. Molly beat the shit out of her a while. Ivory came in, took the belt. Two-minute match. I mean, there's not much to say here. But Clint, quick thoughts on a rating, maybe?
I think all the women's division I've seen that year around this time, that had to be one of the worst and, like, disrespectful for all. Just for all. This is a two-minute match. Just for that, you could have just put them on something like heat. Oh, I care. You wanted to talk about a bathroom break match. That's what this was, a bathroom break match.
I agree. Eric?
The match sucked, but the women in here were gorgeous. I'll give the women 10 out of 10, the match 0 out of 10.
Okay, so the most entertaining part of this match was the APA coming out after, returning and attacking Test and Albert. Other than that, this match is probably like a 0.5 out of 10.
Yeah. I thought this sucked ass. I give it a 0.5, too.
I actually do give it a 0.
What an asshole. Clemens?
He gave it a 2, I think.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding, Eric, by the way. All right, main event. We got the cocky dickhead heel, Kurt Angle, against very over Rock, a super over Steve Austin, an equally ass-holy Triple H, The Undertaker, and Big Quiche, who's the bad guy right now.
Yeah.
I'm a bad man. This is, I don't want to call it a one-match card, but this is the reason we all watch this.
Yeah.
It's the Armageddon Hell in a Cell match, only one of its kind, and a classic. 32 minutes of brilliant Attitude Era carnage. What did you think, Doug?
Well, and also, too, you got to remember, Vince McMahon said he was going to find a way to stop this.
Yeah.
And, because he...
He tried.
And he came out, and he tried to rip the, tried to take the whole cage down, and then Foley came out and had the cops arrest him or remove him from the... remove him from the arena. But this match, again, you had the six, basically the top six guys in the company going at it. It's kind of hard to put into words.
Good thing we have a podcast.
Yeah.
All right, Eric, what do you think?
I love this match. It's probably one of my favorite Hell in a Cell matches of all time. I enjoyed watching all these guys, especially the storyline with Vince trying to stop it and Mick Foley trying to stop Vince from stopping it. And the highlight of the match for me was when Taker pushed Rikishi into the truck. That was the reaction of JR was just priceless, just like it was when Mick Foley fell. Those calls when JR does so many falls off the Hell in a Cell are priceless. I love it.
Well, and the funny thing about this match is that coming into the night. Especially back then, I'm sure a lot of people were thinking, all right, it's got to be either Rock or Austin winning the title, right?
Yeah.
Because they're the two most over guys in the company. Kurt Angle, a lot of people probably thought he still didn't belong in the match. I know a lot of people definitely felt like Rikishi's fat ass didn't belong in the match.
I enjoyed it because of the run he was on.
Well, yeah, and it was good. Somebody had...
He held his own.
When they ripped the door off, you knew somebody was going to take that big bump.
Yeah.
Back then, though, I did not think it was going to be him.
No. That was crazy. I mean, everyone talks about the Mick Foley thing, but this was just as nuts.
A 450-pound guy falling 20 feet off the cell into the bed of a truck.
Yeah. And he didn't move after that.
Yeah, no, he was done. I mean, to be honest with you, too, I actually thought, you know, back then, I thought the guy that was going to win this thing was going to be Triple H, and Rock and Austin were going to be competing, or Triple H and Austin were going to be feuding over the title.
Yeah. Because Austin had just come back, right?
Yeah, he had been back since September, and Triple H was revealed as the mastermind for running Austin over.
Right. But I thought this was great. What did you think, Quintus?
Glennis, speak.
Glennis?
Something happened?
Glennis?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
What did you think of that?
Yeah, I was talking for 5 minutes and you guys didn't hear me. Anyway. Anyway, how rude. Anyway.
Well,
so like I was saying.
You know what, though? I do have to say this. At least somebody else besides Eric has had technical difficulties. Because every week for like the last month, it's been Eric.
What'd you think of the match, Quinn?
I enjoyed it. If you look at it this way, each person had their own little feud throughout this whole cell. You had Austin with the Rikishi and Triple H. So the storyline, The Rock with Kurt Angle trying to get back his WWE Championship. You have The Undertaker, the king of Hell in a Cell at the time. And Triple H, a guy sitting there in a mid-card trying to prove that he's a big main event. Triple H, Austin, everybody has great. These guys have great matches, and the throwing the plot twist. I don't think Rikishi goes off. No way goes off that cell. If it wasn't for Vince McMahon bringing that giant truck down and ripping that door off the cell itself, trying to take the cell off one by one.
Yep.
Yeah, and. The funny thing about this is, yeah, Rock's the one that took the fall, which I don't think a lot of people really, you know, thought was going to happen. I mean, I thought if anybody was going to take the fall, it was going to be Rikishi.
Yeah.
I mean, he took a fall, but not the one that, you know, everybody thought he was going to take.
Yeah. You got thrown in a wood chipper.
Yeah. You know what would have been fucking crazy? As big as he is, it would have been crazy if he actually would have fell through the truck.
Yeah, that would have been nuts. But this was a legendary main event. All guys fought their asses off, and it was great. Everyone was covered with blood, especially Kurt. So Rikishi wasn't bleeding, but that was the only one. What would you rate this?
Well, he's paralyzed in the gut.
You're right.
What would I give it? I'll give it a 10 out of 10.
Damn, all right. Quintus?
I'm going to give it a 9.5 out of 10.
I go 10 out of 10, too. I think this was pretty much perfect. It was a nice prelude to what the Elimination Chamber would be someday. And six people in a Hell in a Cell beating each other's ass was cool, especially six big main eventers like this. I mean, Rikishi's not really what to do. Go ahead.
Well, you're not wrong.
It's okay for Rikishi for a little bit.
Huh?
Yeah, I realize this is a classic Hell in a Cell, the good Hell in a Cell. That's what makes it even better.
Right, yeah. No, I would give it a 10.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, and you could have, you know, you say Rikishi really didn't belong in the match. You could have taken him out and put in either Benoit or Kane.
Yeah, but I liked Rikishi in the match. I thought it was a good inclusion, and it made sense with the current storylines.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Exactly. Let's give final thoughts and a rating to this. I'll start with you, Eric. The whole pay-per-view. What did you think of Armageddon?
I thought the pay-per-view. The pay-per-view was solid. Obviously, the main event was the reason I basically chose this, but I enjoyed the card for what it was. But the main event was the best main, one of the best main events that year, I think. And so I'll give the pay-per-view 9 out of 10.
Okay. Clintus?
I thought it was a good pay-per-view headline for that massive Hell in a Cell. I think if it wasn't for that Hell in a Cell, this would probably be like a really bad pay-per-view. Let's put it that way. I think that other cell was the big point, and it proved I got my money's worth after watching it. So I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10.
All right. I would say that this is one of the better pay-per-views of the year 2000. I thought it might be a bit of a one-match card, but that one match is a classic. And the rest, it might be filler, but it's worth watching filler. So I liked it top to bottom, and I go 9 out of 10 as well. Doug, take us home.
Okay. I thought it was, you know, you could say it's a one-match card. I would actually say it's a two-match card because you had Jericho and Kane.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but this match, I enjoyed the match. I thought it was, I enjoyed the main event, the Hell in a Cell. I thought it was really good. At one point, you felt like all six guys maybe had a shot at winning.
Yeah.
So, I would give the pay-per-view as a whole, I would give it a 9 out of 10.
Absolutely. All right, guys, this was a blast. Armageddon 2000 was a great pay-per-view to watch.
Yeah.
And we will see everybody next week.
Yeah.
I'll
next year.
I'll see myself
next year.
Yeah, 3 weeks. So January 7th will be New Year's Revolution 2007. And before I announce what I have planned for January 14th, because I kind of changed my mind from what
great.
I told you earlier.
Uh-oh.
Before I announce it, I will talk to my three cohorts about it first.
So we will see everybody in the new year. It was a great 2021. We love y'all. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays,
happy
everybody.
Holidays,
we'll see everybody for whatever other shows we have coming up before the Christmas break.
Sounds good. All right.
Later, guys. All right. Later.